lay on your back in the grass and look up at the blue sky. Clouds go sailing past, others stay a bit longer, moving, dissolving, and reassembling before your eyes. They take on many shapes, sometimes they're like gauze, others bunch up, cotton wool, cloudberries, cauliflower, the shape of a ship, the shape of sheep. You want to reach the clouds before they slide away. You reach out and grasp them. Then your idea, your next line, a piece of art comes alive. Dial Nits, a podcast about the Dutch band Nits. A celebration of five decades of sophisticated music from the Netherlands. Your host, Erik Fekkel. Georgia O'Keeffe, Pablo Picasso, Paul Klee, Barbara Hepworth, Ellis Lowry, Joseph Cornell, Henry Moore, Toine Hawks, Bert Hanstra, René Magritte, Hergé, Edward Hopper, Rothko, Bauhaus, The Style. Paintings, movies, sculptures, graphic novels, design, architecture. Influences and role models. The Nits play music with a strongly visual character. Their songs unfold like little movies. These songs are packaged in record covers, sleeves for singles and for albums. Things that used to be important back in the day. Not just as protection against scratches and dust, but also as the first visual representation of the music inside them. The sleeves of the Nits are very diverse. They are geometrical abstractions in the fashion of Piet Mondrian, collection of historical stamps depicting children, drawings of the band outside the rehearsal room, next to a village set in a suburban cityscape. The Nits are something akin to a family business. Their motto is "Do it yourself." Their sleeves are designed by a wife and husband team, Henko Stede and Riemke Kuipers, both educated art teachers.
It often starts with Henk collecting lots of imagery, ideas. It can pop up from anything. And then we start talking about it randomly, exchanging ideas. And then sometimes we're on a path and we think this will be it. And then it can also happen in the very same moment that we change it completely. So it's a very weird, all over the place process. We can talk about it in a very serious setting, working on it, but it can also pop up during preparing a meal or whatever. Yeah. So there's no method. There's no one strict way we do it. It's a process that goes all over the place.
And it changes all the time.
Yep.
You have to be open. Otherwise, if you get stuck with it and you don't like it, you in the end you will hate it when it's finished. Because when it's finished, it means reproduction. It means that there's a pile of albums or CDs or, well, and that will follow you the rest of your life.
But Riemke, do you try to get a feeling of the music as well in what you do after that?
Yes, I always have to ask for the tracks because they're never finished when we get started with the whole design of the album. So during working on it and working, elaborating on ideas about it, and then Henk will grant me the tracks and I can hear them. So I use it, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and especially also the lyrics, yeah. But not in a very literally way, but more to get the vibe and to underpin a kind of feeling that we want to put in it. I think we like to add something and not to echo the music, or just to be very literal. So to me it feels like it's an extra layer. It's an extra part of the whole thing. It's not only the music, but it's also the design, the pictures, the world that you can create with pictures next or on top or close or how you want to say to the music.
That feeling is, of course, more or less based on the moments I remember when you bought a new album. The cover was there all the time. And when you played the album, you looked at it. You looked at Rubber Soul for 250 hours. That image gets so strong in your head. And it counts for many, many albums. John Wesley Harding. I've been looking at that cover for forever, playing the songs. But that, maybe nowadays that's not really happening anymore.
I would venture to say that the Nits make very visual music in a sense.
It's very evocative, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we focus very much on the imagery, and we don't analyze that much. Not in the relationship to the music.
No, but an illustration of the songs, it's probably not there except in the paintings. But when you look at the covers, of course, sometimes it fits very well, like in the Dutch mountains. The moment I looked at those children's stamps from 1951, my birth year, and the song was about my childhood, then the images of the children's stamps, they were fitting very well.
It was almost scaring how much they looked like the members of the Nits as child. Some people even believed it, that those were actual pictures of them.
Giant Normal Dwarf, the fairy tale album from 1990, shows one side of their visual world, with its booklet of colorful, surrealistic drawings of situations from these phantasmagoric songs about small trombones and tadpoles.
Well, you pick a very special one, because Giant Normal Dwarf we designed during a holiday in Italy when I was pregnant with our first child. So it was a very, very special period.
Yes.
We were, on top of the world with the baby growing and preparing for that. And I think it was one of the first albums that we did completely by painting. And
yes.
Yeah. So in that sense, it's a very dear and very special album, because every illustration, we had all the time, because I think we stayed in one spot for maybe 2 or 3 weeks, and we worked every day on it, and it was a very, relaxed period in a way, because we were just there, it was summertime.
And we were, as you already told, we were still with the two of us. Of course.
2.5.
Yes, but still we could afford all our time making drawings the whole day, and we worked outside or in the shade or under an umbrella, and we already had the songs. We divided the work. I found this book, this kind of children's.
Yeah, it was more like an encyclopedia, and it's called something, The Knowledge of Everything.
Yeah. Book of Knowledge.
The Book of Knowledge, yeah. There's very nice illustrations in it, so we could copy a lot from that. Yeah.
But the illustrations are all yours, or did you work together on those?
We worked together. Mm. And for us, it's very clear who made what. But for outsiders, they cannot see, I think, the difference.
No, and sometimes when I look at them, I really have to think which one you did. And because when we were at Rob's recently, he's got one. The one of the people in under the street.
Yeah.
And I think it's yours.
Nope, it's yours.
It's mine.
Yeah.
So that's the here starts. Because it looked a little bit like the way you were painting.
Yeah, Hank is a little bit more exact and a little bit more geometric.
Yeah.
And a little bit more spare with all kind of little things, and I have a tendency to make it a little bit more curly or with little stripes and decorated. So maybe that's a small difference, but I think we also try to make it look like a whole.
Yeah.
But it's a children's book, basically, in a certain sense.
Of course. It started with, of course, the songs and with the map. First, I had this idea of a map, and it looks very much like Holland, where all the songs were situated. all those things were somehow in that map, and that was also a starting point for the recording.
At the other end of the spectrum, Malpensa from 2012. For once, a portrait of the musician on the front cover, a very rare occurrence within it.
I went out this morning to paint a tree.
It just came up?
Yeah, it came up. And we made his photographs in the werf, each one of us, in front of the iron door. Because of the light, it looked a little bit like a painting of Rembrandt. And Riemke put them together. It was never a trio on the photograph. It's just made. Everything is made.
Pixel by pixel.
Yeah, so it looks like we just came in and sit down and chuck. But that's not true.
It's like an old master's painting.
Yeah. So all the details, all the things about light, about how the hair was cut out, and it was quite a long process.
Yes. Yeah. Did we have a kind of reference for it?
No.
No.
The reference was only the photographs that we took.
On the other hand, there is the question in the contrary sense, why not put your heads on the cover?
It is true, because yeah. I was followed by that question already from the beginning. And I remember that that's when things were released in Italy, then someone of the record company kept on saying, I want to see the faces. And he didn't see the faces because they were all hidden. They were sometimes inside, like when you look at a tent and new flat. And of course, on work, we are there. But it's never like we are posing like rock stars. I think we never did.
Yes, we always took care that they were to be seen somewhere in the album, but not on the front or back.
On to one of the late trilogy, Not 2019. A grid with minuscule pictures that are difficult to decipher.
It's the band, of course. It's if you talk about I want to see the faces, now you see 10,000 faces in one picture, of course, but they're hard to recognize. But it started with a photo we made with the band in the Eye Museum. Here, the cinema and museum of film here in Amsterdam. And they've got this box where you can make photographs of little films of yourself. Then they make a flip book for you.
And the movement is there.
But then I asked the band to come there, and we made band photographs for the flip book. So the quality is not that wonderful, but I like it. And then I started doing things in my phone, doing a screenshot, and then again and again and again. So you zoom out completely from one picture to thousand.
There's also a flip book that's called The Power of Ten. And then you go from from space and the earth into a body of a person, into the molecules.
It's the Eames couple did that. It's a famous book, The Power of Ten.
Power of Ten, yeah.
Yeah, and it starts really with a person lying on the grass somewhere in New York.
I think it starts in space, and then it goes into the body of a person.
That was behind it.
And the title? How does that refer to the title? Not?
I know that Robert Young came with Not. Because the music was so like a knot. It was so complicated, so ingewikkeld. That's a better word for complicated. The structure. And we were talking about knots. We were talking about a spiral staircase. We were talking about Hitchcock, the Vertigo movie. yeah, those were the thoughts behind it.
The album Angst from 2017 features a selection of buttons mounted on a piece of cardboard as they were presented for sale in marketplaces.
It happened one day because Henk is visiting the Northern Market every Monday, if possible. I try that he doesn't bring along too much from the market.
It's a flea market.
It's a flea market. But he brought along these little carts with buttons, just because they were beautiful. And he thought he wanted to do something with it, because I think you already had them a long time.
Yeah, I had them for quite some time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think we started off with a different idea. The idea was the painting of Karel Willink. It's in the album.
Yeah.
But that was the starting point.
Yeah.
Because it was
yeah.
all about war. And in that painting of I think 1943 or 2, was about the threat of war. And the painter, Willink, always refused to say that. He denied it. He said it's not true. But there's
the image of the Zeppelin,
mm-hmm. hanging
coming into Amsterdam.
In the south part of Amsterdam, that architecture where he lived and painted. And we liked it, and we were looking for the same place. We went to a different place here in East, that beautiful house. We made pictures, and
it was almost ready.
Almost ready, and then everything was changed by the buttons, because maybe it was too much an illustration. I have no idea. I was not comfortable with it, and then the buttons were so close to being very fragile, and they were also connected to the Jewish tradition of cloth making. So that was a kind of connection, and in a way much more attractive than an already existing image in the shape of a painting that we rebuilt. And we did. We even left Amsterdam, we went to Rotterdam, to the Van Nelle factory, because it's so beautiful, and we made a session there. And there we did the same, the waving of the three men with the raincoats and the hats, to the Zeppelin disappeared.
The buttons, they were more suggestive and more triggering the viewer to think about it. And it has a kind of message, of course, with the being in the house or being safe. I think the painting was very dramatic, because that's also in the Willink painting. Very big contrast with the clouds and the...
Always dark clouds.
Yep.
Really dark clouds, plus a Zeppelin.
Yep.
Representing the Germans. So
yeah.
This is what I meant by illustration.
Yep.
Just
yes.
before.
Yep.
And here I was trying to put together the word Angst, German word. For dread or something, and those buttons.
And the word Angst came at the last day of the session. I think we recorded everything. When I came home, I found this word, and that next day I brought it to the studio, to the Werf.
There was a lot of discussion about it.
Yeah, we had many discussions about titles, always.
Yeah.
Then I said, well, it should be Angst.
In Dutch it means fear.
And of course it's also a German word. And because the album is also a lot about Germany and our connection with Germany in a good and a bad way.
There is a handwriting and there is no handwriting.
Mm-hmm.
True?
Yeah.
They are really a reflection of the way, the whole process. We make music and we make images. And it's not a thing that we discuss a lot.
No, and we don't look for coherence. That we say, okay, how did the last one look? How can we continue from there? No, we start from scratch.
We live
place where we live. We live a while, like dinosaurs and butterflies, and we die. Goodbye. When we walk a while on Penny Lane and Arnold Grove. When we walk a while on never-ending roads and dead-end streets, and we turn. Life is a cadeau and you can get it for free. Love is a bouquet and you can get it for free. When we love a while, like Nicky and Jean, like cats and dogs. When we love a while, like Yoko and John, like Gilbert and George, then we'd burn. Then we burn. Life is a chateau and you can live there with me. Love is a bouquet and you can get it for free in the flower shop. Flower shop. When we drive a while on autobahn and winding roads. When we live a like lilies of the valley and fleur de lis, then we die. Goodbye. Life is a cadeau and you can get it for free. Love is a bouquet and you can get it for free in the flower shop.
In 1987, the song and the album In the Dutch Mountains became an international success. Also on the back of the video to the song, which receives an international prize at the Midem in Cannes. It is one of many videos Henk Hofstede has realized over the years. Michael Zenhauser is a renowned film journalist at Swiss Radio SRF. I asked him to have a look at some of the videos and the visual world of the Nits. We start off with Dutch Mountains, the flatland, a rowboat, a bike.
It's very striking because within the first few images and with the sound, there's quite a few references that just open up the field. First, you have the Dutch clichés. You have the water, the plane. Then you have the windmill. The windmill is just a shadow. And the sound, together with the windmill, quotes Sergio Leone, Once Upon a Time in the West. That's the opening scene from one of my most favorite films. And if you quote that, there's an irony in it, of course. And it's not just on the visual level, it's also with the sound. That squeaking sound is from the wind wheel in the Leone film. And the irony is immediately there. then there's this movement. I mean, the main movement in the film is from the left to the right with this boat. You go always in the reading direction, and you never reach the end of the page. It just goes on. And then there's this very strange moment when you just have all these images of static movement, especially from the Tangerley fountain in Basel, these two little spoon things that just keep on spooning water. So on one level you have this movement from the man in the boat who's rowing, and the movement is continuous, and then you have these artistic renderings of completely useless movement that leads nowhere, and that's superimposed to the other. It's the same irony again. And of course the Dutch mountains, they're just completely flat, but then you have these valley of bricks within the houses. So I think on the visual level, it's the same irony the title of the song also promises. That's just great.
A tent, a big water bucket, a scientist, a bunch of roses. Radio shoes from 1990.
That's a striking image because there you have first a tent being set up. So you have a location that is limited. Then you have these blocks of ice. You have the whistle in the song, which is always rendered with the teapot. The teapot is whistling. That's a nice image for that sound that repeats. Then you have these various settings of things that are being set up, but you end up with it, that kind of a steel bathtub and the man standing in there pouring water on his shoes, and on probably the radio shoes. He's just sinking into that thing. Maybe he's melting away. It's a simple visual again, because at one point he's not just melting away, but he's just falling through the floor, through the antipodes, and he finds himself in Australia. So radio can transport you wherever you want. And if you're the wizard's apprentice, like he seems to be in the tent, he's trying something. So I think the falling down through the floor, that has again something of this transporting image, the same dynamic that just keeps going somewhere else. Within a location that is strictly limited with this tent, which is nice because you have a limited visual, you don't need the more background. And you always feel like this tent is probably in the wide open space where they set it up, but could be anywhere. This kind of staging where you have the wide open space and you fall through to another wide open space where they have kangaroos and the boomerang as well. So the cliches come again, but of course it's just the antipodes that you can melt through the core. It's great.
An idyllic French village on a river, three musicians out on the town with some very big balloons. Soap Bubble Box from 1992.
That's the simplest idea of them all. I mean, you have soap bubble and you have the image within the soap bubble, which again is graphically, it's an image referring back to the 70s, most likely. I recall a few even album covers where this fisheye, the sphere, where you just have a kind of a contained world. But you have these three, the musicians, the three main characters there. One is standing on his head, the other one is lying there. And it's a peaceful atmosphere. And whenever the refrain talks about MoMA or New York, it's another contrast. Because you don't have Manhattan, you don't have the big city, you just have this board at the dam somewhere. Just because it's so simple, it's repetitive, but never to a boring point, because there's always something added.
The view from a hotel room in Helsinki, a steel beam hanging above the square in front of the central station. Da 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 from 1994.
The first image that comes to mind when you see that steel rail is the Indian workers constructing the tower in Manhattan. It's one of these skyscrapers. So you have all these characters fearlessly walking across the steel beam with not a moment's thought of maybe they could fall down. Of course they can't, because it's back screen, it's rendered, it's absolutely safe. It's half of the image. It's the upper half. They're walking across there. There's all these characters that's showing up. Then he's talking about this magic girl. And then you end with probably the five musicians at that point all hanging upwards on the same beam, which is again the same image with the antipodes from the other tent. Again, you go in the wrong direction, but it doesn't matter because you're floating. It's the same irony again. I think I like it that all these images are the simple and simply impossible. And you always can see how it's done. And I think that's the main point, because it's not image trickery that keeps you guessing, but it's so simply made that you always think, yes, I could have done that as well if I had the great idea they had. That's charming.
The musicians in the band in stark black and white. Ivory Boy, the year 2000.
It's a kind of a goodbye. I mean, the text of the song makes it quite clear that somebody's just dying of cancer. And they're all saying goodbye, so you just have the musicians and they are personally there. You have the faces. And yet there is a kind of a contrast within the image, especially if the person singing on screen is the face of a woman, but I think it's always the same man on different voice levels. And that's made quite clear. So you have to shift, but the face is a sincere face, and it renders the same expression you would have had if you had the singer as well. This has an eerie quality. If you see this woman singing and not really singing, just mouthing probably, it has just this otherworldly quality. It's like an echo. So it's maybe saying goodbye to somebody who's waving already from the other side. I think this time it's not upside down and the antipodes, but it's on the other side of the image. There's the other world already. And it could be frightening, but it isn't, because they're all there. So I think it's kind of a crossover across the border, and a goodbye always is.
After viewing this clip selection from the oeuvre of the Nits, is film specialist Michael Zeinhauser surprised at what he's seen?
No, because it's the Nits. I mean, there's a few qualities to these videos that are definitely not sales pitches, and that's the main point, I think. There's no vanity at all. I mean, the musicians are not presenting themselves in a virtuoso way or in a staged imagery of somebody who wants to be a star. But it's more an attempt of having images that are being conjured up by the song, by the lyrics, by the ideas behind it, and not just image for image, but going beyond that, having something additional. It's an additional dimension that makes it really interesting. I think the most striking moment is when I catch myself not listening to the words anymore, but just being stuck on the image. And I mean, that's one of the greatest compliments you can make somebody who's making images, be it a painter or a filmmaker or whoever. If the image is stronger than the word, and even stronger than the music maybe, it's a standalone element, and it's really, it's something else.
Another one in black and white shot along a river in Amsterdam. The musicians dancing with square white boards. Sunday Painter from 2022.
I'm a rent collector walking down a dead end street. I'm a Sunday painter painting 7 days a week. And my mother's
was filled with so many matchstick people.
People call them matchstick figures. They may be, I don't mind. If they like to call them matchstick figures, well, they'll let them do it. I don't mind at all. But I tried to probably quite right with them. So.
Of all these videos, it's the most professionally rendered. It's just one trick, actually. It's that square, a white canvas. Technically quite sophisticated trickery this time. It's not something I could do myself just within a camera. But the image is simple, and because you have the square image and the image of the man, it reminded me of the Magritte paintings, and I think it also refers to those Magritte surrealist paintings. And again, the movement is not a vertical, but this time it's horizontal. It's going away. In Ivory Boy, we had not the vertical movement of the others, but the movement on one side of the image on the other. And this time, it's not, the image is not the border. There's no beyond the image. It's moving away. And that's quite striking again.
The clocks in my room, they all have different times. I don't want to know the real time.
Is you keep on working and you still keep on wondering what it all means, and it goes on and on and on, and there you are.
Pim Kops, keyboard player of the Dijk, multi-instrumentalist of the Avalanche Quartet.
We were a band without videos, and we were a band that didn't want to do that for some reason. I mean, we were a little bit stubborn about it. And I was very, very enthusiastic when I saw the clip of Dutch Mountains for the first time. I was really struck by it. So on an occasion that Hank and me played with more artists together, and I really told him that the clip was so, so very beautiful. And I recognized something also of myself, of my way of looking in the world or whatever. And from that moment on, I decided that if ever our band was even thinking of making a video, I wanted to ask Hank for it. So we did. We made more clips. I mean, also, it's funny because I went with the Nits to France and to so Strasbourg and to Paris, and I filmed because I was filming all the time. And Hank always did the same, of course, filming. And he went with us to St. Petersburg and he filmed us. So of out of the material in St. Petersburg, and there was also a clip made. I think around the time that we were talking about making a video, we couldn't stop talking about art and film and so on. So that's in fact when our friendship started. And even after St. Petersburg, I remember that in the attic of my house, we were editing some material of St. Petersburg, and meanwhile drinking pepper vodka and smoking cigars. It's really another era. Yeah.
Würden Flachländer sind die Berge, die Sehnsüchte, und für uns das Meer. Vielleicht ist das so ein fast archetypischer Grundreflex, den man hat, dass man das, was man nicht hat, sucht und ersehnt.
Many people living in the flatlands dream of the Alps, whereas we who live in the Alps dream of the sea. Maybe this is a basic reflex of humanity, that we desire what we do not have. This is Konrad Bitterli, director of the Museum of Art in the city of Winterthur in Switzerland. In July of 2018, this museum staged an exhibition named Dutch Mountains, vom Holländischen Flachland in die Alpen, from the flatlands of Holland to the Alps.
Wir hatten diese Idee, eine Ausstellung zu realisieren über...
We had this idea of realizing an exhibition about the way the Swiss Alps ended up in Dutch paintings in the 17th century. Even though there are no mountains in Holland, but it is a pretty rich tradition, a sort of subgenre. There was a businessman in Amsterdam who engaged the services of a painter named Jan Hackert. His job was to paint the route from the north to the south along Protestant countries. Hackert contacted Konrad Meyer from Zurich. They went on hikes through the alpine regions of Glarus and Grison, and they painted and drew. In fact, one very famous painting of Jan Hackert's depicting the Lake of Zurich is property of the Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam. So we had a plan, but then we needed a snappy title. And I had this song floating in the back of my head when the Nits were in the charts. I grew up with them. And that's how Dutch Mountains became the title of the exhibition.
Deshalb hat dann die Ausstellung am Schluss den Titel Dutch Mountains gekriegt.
Was Konrad Bitterli aware of Hank's background in arts?
Ich wusste es natürlich nicht, dass ich damals die Nits gehört habe, aber ich habe natürlich im Hinblick drauf.
At the time when I first heard the song, I wasn't aware of this, but in researching, I found out that the video to the song was really an art video. Long shots, the subtle irony, the way they show all the clichés about the Netherlands, the cows, the flat land. I started realizing that the chart hit must have been a sort of an accident, if one may say so, and that they came from an art environment. This is, in fact, a video that you won't shoot if you didn't have an education in arts. The video is made with the visual language from video art.
Also das ist schon eine visuelle Sprache, die eigentlich aus der Videokunst kommt. Da ist ein unglaubliches Wissen um kulturelle Traditionen und künstlerische Traditionen vorhanden.
It is obvious that they have deep knowledge of cultural and artistic traditions, which include graphic design, which in turn was very strongly influenced by Mondrian and the architects, artists and graphic designers. Mondrian's art comes from the sea, from the movement of waves and trees, of church towers. He pursued that abstraction with a lot of consequence. And one understands the meaning of abstraction, to develop an artistic language that has no connection in reality anymore.
Symbolistischen Darstellungen von Kirchtürmen, notabene auch, und eben vom Meer und von Bäumen in der Landschaft, drin zu diesem waagrecht, senkrecht kommt, mit den Primärfarben und diesem Weiß und Schwarz. Das ist so eine unglaubliche Konsequenz. Man versteht dann auch den Begriff Abstraktion, das Abstrahieren aus der Realität hinaus zu einer autonomen Bildsprache, die sich nicht mehr bezieht auf eine Realität.
The Dutch landscape, an abstraction in itself. In 1962, Jacques Brel released his song Le Plat Pays, in Flemish, Mijn Vlakke Land. He describes low-hanging skies, the endless wasteland of the sea, with countless fogs still to come, cathedrals and maypoles as the only mountains. The wind comes from everywhere at once and holds the flatlands of Flanders prisoner. A very evocative song, in its lyrics, but also musically. Can one hear a landscape? Can one sing a landscape, like the Aborigines in Australia apparently do? In 1984, I invited my father to a concert of the Nits. When I asked him how he had liked it, he said the following. It was too loud, but I liked the music. It sounded like home. When I asked him what he meant by that, he paraphrased his answer and said that the music reminded him of the place where he grew up. My dad was from Dunkirk in the French Flanders, a stone's throw from Belgium, the same flat landscape. What he said that evening has stayed with me ever since. Sigrid van Essel is a painter. She grew up in Davos in the Swiss Alps, the daughter of a Dutch couple. In her early 20s, she went to study art in the Netherlands. Her theme? The endless flat lands under an overwhelming sky, the artificial landscape, the horizon. We meet her in her exhibition at the Museum des Speeltoren in Monnickendam. The exhibition has the title Horizon.
Als ik toen ik in dat Nederlandse landschap terechtkwam, vanuit het berglandschap, viel me natuurlijk die enorme wijdheid op, die horizonnen die overal zijn. En ik vond het heel erg moeilijk om mij te verhouden tot die ruimte die bijna eindeloos is.
When I moved to the Netherlands from the Alps, I immediately noticed the almost endless spaces, those horizons. I found it very difficult to relate to them. In a mountain landscape, you can relate yourself to a mountain or a tree and then explain your own position in that space. When I went to the Art Academy in Groningen, I painted buildings, architecture, installations and bridges. At the opening of one of my exhibitions, an art historian who knew of my Swiss upbringing said, "You must be afraid of the space, which is why you are looking for verticals in a horizontal landscape. That's why you paint so many cityscapes and installations." I think he was right with that interpretation.
En daarom schilder jij zoveel stadsgezichten en installaties en dat soort dingen. En ik denk dat hij heel erg gelijk heeft met die interpretatie toen.
Does a landscape change the way of thinking?
In mijn geval was het zelfs zo.
As I knew, a third of the Netherlands is below sea level. Water is everywhere. It comes from the Alps and the rivers flowing from them. It comes from the sea. Thanks to the dikes and large locks and delta works, the land is kept safe. Water comes from below, the groundwater that constantly needs regulation. And there is the rain, of course. I felt like I was living in a swamp, and that's basically what the Netherlands are. As a person who didn't grow up in the Netherlands, I was very conscious of this situation, and that gave me an unsafe feeling at first.
Ik was mij toch als niet in Nederland opgegroeid iemand heel bewust van die situatie. Dus in eerste instantie gaf dat mij een onveilig gevoel. Dan is het natuurlijk ook de lucht.
The sky in the Netherlands is endless. There are enormous cloud structures that you see in the traditional Dutch paintings. Horizons are usually very low. A large part of the image is sky and clouds. When I first came to live in the Netherlands, I thought I could see snow and mountains, and that was soothing to me. But it was just a cloudy sky that I somewhat misinterpreted. So that was my homesickness. In my paintings, I usually place the horizon high. You then see a lot of land, and especially cultured land, polders, where they built dikes against the water and filled the space with sand. The horizon is either the skyline of a city, or in the countryside, the church towers of villages that are sometimes only 30 meters high. But you can see them from far away because the land is so flat.
En dat heeft natuurlijk alles te maken met het feit dat, dat het land zo plat is.
My take on this would be that differences in landscape shape your idea about the world. And that this influences art, not only visually, but also in music.
Ja, dat heeft ermee te maken hoe je namelijk ruimte vaststelt in een plat landschap. Hè? En in berglandschap heb je een berg.
Yes, this is because of how you realize space in a flat landscape. In the Alps, there are mountains. There is light and shade. In a flat landscape, there's only a few contours, except on the horizon, or sometimes a cityscape with which you can create space. The sky is often cloudy. The sun shines through this, then some more clouds. And all of this can be seen on the landscape. You have a line of light, then a dark line. Towards the horizon, you see a striped landscape. I find that this is typically Dutch. In the paintings of Ruysdael, who painted a lot around Haarlem, you can see how he creates space in a landscape by alternating between light and dark. Towards the horizon, these contrasts become reduced. And these horizontal landscape lines are an abstraction. The funny thing is that here, in this room, there is a large painting of 3 meters wide that only has differently colored lines. So you could say it's a graphic image. Once, I showed it at an exhibition, and a woman told me she recognized the place where she lives. These abstract expressions can relate to something very realistic.
Uitingen ook direct appelleren aan een heel realistisch gegeven. Ik denk dat het natuurlijk het gevoel van ruimte,
I think the feeling of the space is very important. And the feeling that the space is nearly infinite. And what I think is even more important than the flatland is the fact that the Dutch made so much land themselves. And that is sort of a victory over nature, you could say. And I find, and I don't want to link this to the Nits, that this is the general Dutch mentality. In relation to the Nits, I'm curious what they would say themselves about this, but I'm sure a landscape influences a person's thinking and their creativity.
Een invloed heeft op het denken van de mens en op het inschatten van je eigen mogelijkheden als mens. Wat je creatief aan kunt, wat je creatief aangaat.
In 2001, Henk Hofstede got invited to the Biennale of Contemporary Art in Lyon. Musicians that are also visual artists were asked to contribute a piece. Among the other guests, Robert Wyatt and Arto Lindsay. The Portable House is a video installation of multiple screens, with images shot inside the Hofstede Corpus family home. In an interview, Henk was asked what he was expressing in his video installation, and he said, "It is almost a study in falling light, that there is not much happening in these images." He shows his daughters in different stages of their lives and the passing of time, a bit like a painting by Pierre Bonnard, a post-impressionistic painter from France. Some of the songs from Henk's first solo album were part of the installation, but they were shorter and sung in English.
He was a soldier when he came back from a great war in his head, and he said, "I was a swimmer in a river in the years before the war, and my wife, she was waiting in the brown car when I was dying for a ring she had lost.